What is considered the fastest growing technological advancement in our world that have totally changed the way we interact, work, and live? Now, what if I said the internet, smartphones, and even cars, although took the world by storm for sure, they did not spread their impact, though, around the world as AI has? And now that you know this, does this change whether you're going to familiarize yourself with how we're going to live and work in the existing world with it? I mean, people may debate that answer, but I'm going to dispel any other comparison today. And teachers and educational leaders listening, if you're not using it, is it because you like to work? Are you not using it because you love to answer emails? Leaders, are you not using it because you have all of the answers figured out to your issues and problems that you encounter at your school sites? Those are all really good reasons, but we know they're not true. So let me begin a series of debatable questions, and let's talk about how over however long this will take to get you comfortable with using AI. So I want to teach you to be comfortable with using AI today. My name is Joe Clussy, and I'm your traveling principal here, your host for today's show. This show is designed to elevate your game as an administrator or a teacher, and how better to do this by keeping you on the forefront of what's currently happening in education in our world. So let's dive right in then. How much does GPT cost? So first you should know two things. Number one, ChatGPT-3 is free. Open source AI, open source means exactly that. It's open to the public for free use. This immediately separates the genius of this movement from cars, home computers, PCs, right? Smartphones, because only a population of people could afford those items. If you were usually affluent, you could progress a little bit faster. And I'm just going to repeat that again, because it's extremely important for people to understand. If you were a little bit affluent, if you were rich, you had the advantage with PCs, with cars, with smartphones. Now, you do not. Now, you have a free source to help you learn what you need so you can get, I guess, rich in a way that you haven't figured out in your life yet. Now, define rich how you will, physically, metaphorically, figuratively, whatever. So, I mean, the reason why AI has grown exponentially faster than any tech advancement our world has seen to date is because it's free and available for all of us to use. There is a paid version, of course. You have quicker access, guaranteed that you're always going to get on it. But I use it a lot, and I rarely am not allowed on it anymore. So I don't know. It remains to be seen as to whether or not it's worth it. Now, if you're a teacher or a leader in schools, let's talk about how to use it. And I want to do so by telling my story, because I'm a 45-year-old, consider myself tech savvy when it comes to most things that have been out there for a while. Macs, PCs, Chromebooks, smartphones, Bluetooth, whatever. HTML, I draw the line. But I've messed with metadata before enough to know how to do some damage. When I went to OpenAI to log into the free version, I needed to make an account. This kind of stunk, but I did it and haven't gotten a stitch of spam or anything that I know of differently. So that's also when people sign up for things, they don't know what's going to happen to your information, etc. In this situation here, extremely safe. So once I logged in and I'm actually into GPT on openai.com, I made my account, I verified my email. That's how they know that you're real. And I log in and I have this clean screen in front of me with only a chat bar on the bottom, a blinking icon, ready for me to type a prompt or a question. And on the left was what looked to be a place to store my search history as I went through. So I typed in, "What is the weather today in Ventura, California?" And it said that it wasn't a search engine capable of this type of research because it hadn't been updated since 2021 in September, I believe, and foiled on my first try. Then I thought, well, let me change my question. So I typed in, "I need a curriculum for a high school construction class," and hit enter. Within 10 seconds, I had 10 units typed out. I followed with, "Expand the first one," and it did it. It knew what I was referring to and did what I asked. It took the information available on the internet and gave me the answer I needed based on what the internet has available to it. And so I've said this before on the show, I've heard this all over the place. The GPT chatbot is also considered the wisdom of the internet. So then I wanted to work on an aspect of a perfect lesson plan unit. Which is a bit of a presentation I've been working on. So I asked GPT, "What are aspects of the most effective lesson plan template for today's high school students in America?" When I got most of the information related to a method I'm dubbing from the workshop model, I responded with, "I think it should be more specifically based on parts of that model," and it spit out a newer version of this perfect lesson plan template with a lot more of a consideration of the workshop model. And then I had this awesome combination of what I was looking for with the workshop model, heavily considered in the influence of the design. And it was pretty awesome, I have to say. It was really cool to look at. And it was then that I knew this was only as beneficial to my answer as the quality and accuracy of the question that I asked. And it was regarding the relevance of the query in my search. I mean, it was really bizarre. It was a very interesting skill, question asking, rather than answer seeking. Right? It was cool. Once I figured this out, I was off and running. I began searching for lists of best practice revolving around asking open-ended questions, revolving around differentiated instruction. And for ideas on dealing with like challenging students, even in a post-pandemic world, even in the Central Valley of California, and the geographical reference would assist, I figured, the answers I was looking for. Whereas if I was to put in New York City, as opposed to the Midwestern states of the United States, I mean, of course the geographical reference is going to sway the outcome of the answer. In no time at all, I was flooded with resources. And then I tried it. "What is the future of education?" I typed in. And my answer was vague. It was like textbook stock with tech infused and a generic feel to it. It was really like nothing but a shell of what it could be. But I realized the difference between what it responds with and what I'm capable of responding with based on that question, right? What is the future of education? So I'm making real assumptions as well, whereas that question, I guess, revolves around needing a vague answer. Yes, it can create scenarios, for examples, easy enough. But it's only going to get as granular as your question asks. Now, I'm a teacher, and I know my kids can go home and look up every answer to everything now. Well, guess what? They always could. And it's just now super, super easy and free to do. So now, what we know, what it does, and how to use it, just a little bit with what we know and what it does. How can we make this useful for us? I mean, okay, let's take this for example. We'll go off tangent, right? So tomorrow's lesson, what is it? If you don't know, feed the prompt your style, your idea, your goal, your levels of student learning in the class, the amount of kids, the time you have, and boom. If you don't like it, ask for another one, and then another, and then another. If you are having a hard time with the class, feed the prompt the issue and ask. If you have an email from a parent and it's on something stock that you've repeated all year, feed the prompt and revise the response, but don't spend your time on it any more than you have to. Have it help you with FAQs. Oh my gosh. Then you could just direct people to a conversation that's already happened in writing. If you need ideas, if you need samples, homework, questions, you name it. Now, can your kids go and find answers to the questions for homework? Yes. What do you do about this now that you know? Factor it in. When we came out with calculators, didn't we shy away from those as well at the start? Right? Now, you start with using your calculators. So, using GPT, find me examples from the text that revolve around conflict. Then, determine an outline as to how you can support the type of conflict that's considered. And, I don't know, the purpose this plays in the plot of the story, too. You have students come into class the next day having spent a little bit of time on the topic, looking at answers and copying and pasting. True. But they show up to a class the next day and you have several real-world applicable examples of conflict. And students are going to have to make connections to like conflicts and examples in class based on their reasoning of the connection from what they just researched to the comparison of the example you're giving them. Now you are teaching research, comprehension of literary elements, making connections between text and real world. And this is embraces what GPT can do. It doesn't resist it. It doesn't call it plagiarism and cheating and ban people from using it. I mean, how about math? How about you can ask it to explain to you something in 122 different languages? So you can download the extension and have it speak to you in the same language as you speak to it. It's free as well. So if students ask GPT to explain it to them as someone who struggles with understanding the language of math, the vocabulary will be that of an easier lexile level and attempts to reach a better audience as long as you sway the direction or the prompt. How about inputting an essay with a grading rubric and trying that? How about IEP goals for all you special education folks out there listening? What about asking for new examples, new methods, student-centered ones, hands-on ones, real-world applicable ones? How about cross-curricular ones? How about this? I typed in, what are the most common issues with collaborative team teaching models with general education and special educators? And what are solutions for each? And out popped what I felt were ideas that were pretty accurate. I mean, there it is. A major issue we've all been struggling with. You can put in what your problem is and brainstorm different solutions. How about asking it an age-old question for all of you leaders out there? How do you use data? Put the data in. How can you respond with new ideas? Ask. How can you find new solutions, plans, and answers? How about sentence starters for scaffolding assignments? Mad Libs for vocabulary, scripts for podcasts? Does it replace writing? No. But it does supplant. It won't substitute. It'll supplant. It does need a human touch. It needs us to take what the wisdom of the internet gives us and make something new with it. It's a tool, nothing more. Any piece of technology in a classroom is a tool. It presents a technique. It's not the way, it's not the replacement for teachers who are teaching, but it can certainly give it a try. How about this one? It can be counsel. It can offer advice. It can really respond in a way that is awkwardly engaging, and that's because I allow it to. I've embraced AI and ask it daily for advice to improve what I buy, how I live, and how I understand the world around me. I'm going to keep sharing ways I'm using it or what I'm seeing in schools and how they are using it. You would be surprised. All it takes is a chance to sit down and mess around with it a little bit, and before you know it, it's just like any other amazing invention that we've come across in our lives, and it changes the way you live. My name is Joe Clossy, and this is a deep one, and I know we're getting tech heavy on these shows, but we sort of have to right now, I feel. So I'm saying, if you're listening to this still, then you're going to try it. And once you allow yourself to embrace it and it helps your teaching and learning, you will certainly be glad that you did. Good luck.